Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is a Marvel Chronology episode, a Secret War Saturday, as we continue our march toward the end of Secret Wars. We are on Secret Wars 2, number 7 of 9, a creative team of scripter Jim Shooter, pencils by Al Milgram, inks by Steve Lealoha, colors by Juliana Ferreter. Ferreter? F-E-R-R-I-T-E-R? Ferreter?
Sure.
Yeah, and letters by Rosen and Friends. Charge of the Dark Brigade. And if you joined us, I guess it was last week when we were talking about the tie-ins for 6, I mentioned how this is kind of where the series bottoms out. This is probably the low point in the series. Issue 7, and it does get a little better for the last couple, but as Nick and I both mentioned last time, too many tie-ins, they're dragging the story out too long, and
inconsistent.
Yeah, and well, what happens when you do that, and you have all these tie-ins with all these different writers, everybody's kind of putting their own spin and their own take on the Beyonder, so then it ends up being, inconsistent.
Well, they handle it better these days. Like, Secret Empire compared to this is obviously decades apart, because right. It is literally decades apart. And this is the second time they've ever done it.
And they've learned to, if we're going to have this big event, everybody who's going to be involved and have crossovers is going to attend the summit, the writing summit for it. And mm-hmm. everybody's going to kind of be on the same page. Whereas here, it's like, I think if you look at something like the tie-in to Power Man and Iron Fist, right? Like, technically, we saw Power Man and Iron Fist in like issue 2 of Secret Wars when he turned their building to gold at the end. And the Beyonder himself has evolved a lot since then. But yet, when it ties into the Power Man and Iron Fist, they show up and they're right in front of their building. Right? And he seems like so much, and their building they're like, where's our building? Totally forgetting that it got turned into gold. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And then when you look at the tie-ins, even within tie-ins within the same month, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, the Beyonder was almost wise beyond his years in, so to speak, in Cloak and Dagger when he decides to get rid of anybody who has anything to do with illicit drugs. But over in Power Pack, he won't even heal their mom. Which seems like an obvious thing, right? It's just the wild inconsistencies because you have these different writers who are writing the Beyonder just however they see fit without any kind of oversight. And it's kind of strange because when you think about it, like, the guy who's writing the series is Jim Shooter, who's the editor of Marvel. So you would think that he'd be like, this doesn't work because this. But honestly, I feel like at this point, they're just – Marvel's just cashing the checks, baby. That's all they're doing.
Probably.
Obviously,
the art too wildly different. I think the way he's drawn and what he's wearing, maybe that's part of his character, is he changes his clothes all the time. But it's wildly inconsistent how we see the Beyonder too, it feels
like. Yeah, and that's another thing. Al Milgram's the penciler the entire time. But when the early issues, in addition to Steve Lealoha on inks, we had Joe Rubinstein, who's a very well-known inker. And so the art was just tighter in general. And then in the last few issues, when it's just Steve Lealoha, it's a lot looser. You lose consistency. So, well, let's go into the synopsis and then we can talk about – I don't even know what we're going to talk about, what a train wreck this is. I don't know. We saw last issue where the Beyonder got rid of Death. And then realized his mistake, if nobody ever dies, the entire universe is going to become overcrowded at some point, and how it just...
And then a man became Lady Death, which confuses me still, but continue.
Well, Death doesn't have a gender. It's just in the Marvel Universe, she's... In the Marvel Universe, using
Death.
The pronouns. In the Marvel Universe, it's always... Death is always kind of portrayed as female. But, they've even said themselves, Death is gender neutral. But yeah,
forward thinking.
Once the Beyonder realizes his mistake in issue 6 and, he, the guy that wanted to be somebody important, agrees to become the new Death, and because he desires that and the Beyonder uses his powers, they're actually able to reestablish death. And so here we see Mephisto stewing in his underworld realm with death by his side, talking about the things that happened last issue, about death being basically vanquished, destroyed, and that affects him very much because the way Mephisto gets his power and his pleasure and like his whole reason for existence is souls. Once they've, once their mortal vessels have died, while the souls, before they pass to wherever final resting place they're going to go, they pass through Mephisto's realm. He has minions that torture those souls, and the torture of those souls brings Mephisto his, both his power and like sustains him, like gives him, you know, energy, sustenance, you know, what passes for happiness to a Mephisto type creature. And so he's worried that the Beyonder is still out there, still capable on a whim of changing his mind. And he sees the Beyonder sitting on a uncharted desert isle. Apparently he took a 3-hour tour and ended up there. And he's just sitting on the beach thinking. And the Beyonder says, "We are subject to his whim. The very sight of him infuriates me." So apparently one of Mephisto's ancestors was a pirate, which fits in with the whole desert isle theme. So meanwhile, his minions, do you hear that? Rage waxes within the master's breast. More torture. And they throw a bunch more souls into the fiery waters of Mephisto's realm. Mephisto says, how comforting. I do love my work. And he says, "I don't ask much, just a steady supply of souls liberated from their flesh and blood housings by your kind offices, my dear," as he speaks to death. "Souls captured between their sojourn on the mortal coil and their final fate, souls mined to torture for an eon or two. To think that the Beyonder cut off my supply of souls by eliminating you, how relieved I was when he relented and restored you, my beloved death." But again, that could happen at any moment, if the Beyonder were to change his mind. So he says, "I have a plan to ensure that my fate is not hanging by a slender thread of a fool's fancy." And all the energy that the Beyonder used to vanquish death, he basically poured it into a cup and then had death drink it. And that's how death was ultimately defeated before they turned a new being into death. Well, all that energy, all that power, it cannot be created or destroyed, right? So the Beyonder expended an enormous amount of energy to destroy death, but because energy was not lost, and though it was spent, it would eventually recoalesce and the Beyonder would absorb it back into himself over time. But instead, Mephisto has intercepted that power. He siphoned it away into a device called Beyonder's Bane, this crazy, weird-looking Jack Kirby contraption that is containing the energy of the Beyonder. And can it contain the energy without destroying the machine? Perhaps. Can this energy actually defeat the Beyonder? Perhaps. Even Mephisto himself admits that it's a risk. So meanwhile, on Earth, on the uncharted desert isle, the Beyonder is there pondering. Are you pondering what I'm pondering? Obviously, he's not thinking about taking over the world because he could do that with a snap of the finger. Perhaps that's what he's missing all along, is a pinky to go along with him and bounce ideas off of. So as he sits there pondering, a ship comes by from a neighboring island. It's Ed Strunk. And he was a sales exec, but, you know, he decided to retire and become a famous painter or something.
God, what is it with the series and, like, people wanting to, like, find new callings? It's like this whole series is like someone writing about themselves wanting to find a new calling in life, where it's like, but I love from it. The very beginning, where there's the angry ad executives like, "Make me a supervillain so I can destroy everyone."
And nobody wants to work for their money. This guy's sales exec, came here to find myself, you know, famous painter or something. Got any magazines or Jack Daniels? Like, would you not bring that stuff? You're an ad exec, like, or a sales exec. Why would you not bring your, you know, Jack Daniels? Don't you have your subscription of Playboy, like, air dropped over the island? Come on now. So he says, what are you doing here? Banner says, thinking. What a great idea.
Oh, God.
Meanwhile, 115 miles south, the Thing apparently has gotten himself a job in a movie fighting aliens. And his supplies come in. See, the Ed Strunk guy needs this pilot that the Thing has in his employ that brings him Iron City beer, which is like the greatest beer ever. And he discovered it when he was in Pittsburgh wrestling. Because the Thing never wrestled. He wrestled. He's a wrestler. Right?
I love his favorite beer is from there too.
Yeah, Iron City beer, man. So the pilot is like, so what's the deal with this Beyonder? And the Thing like loses his temper and accidentally crushes a bunch of the beer cans covered in Iron City beer. Oh, what a waste. Alcohol abuse right there. He says, why? I thought you whooped him. I did, but I wanted to kill him. And Hopper says, a gentle soul like you, that's hard to believe. All right, Hopper, I'll tell you the story. And then you tell me if I wasn't justified. And here we go with the giant synopsis. We hear all about Secret Wars on the battle world. We hear about the Thing staying behind because he could turn human. We hear about him, Thing, Ben Grimm, coming back and finding out Alicia Masters was stolen away by that young whippersnapper, Johnny Storm. I blame Chris Evans. And him saying, I didn't care much after that. I drifted around, hung out with some bikers for a while, ended up as a wrestler.
Chris Evans is so damn handsome. So,
well, yeah, who wouldn't want to leave Rocky old ugly Thing to
Rocky be with? Space Grimm. Yeah.
That's right. Rocky Grimm Space Ranger.
That's it.
So Thing says, while I was living a sordid existence and venting my hostilities in the ring, seems the Beyonder came to Earth. I guess he was tired of just watching from afar and wanted to check us out firsthand as one of us. So then he talks about how he fought him in the ring and almost killed him. And at the last minute, he wimped out. But Hoppy, I still want to. I wake up in the middle of the night thinking about it. I guess that makes me an unrequited murderer. Heck, I don't know what I am anymore. And Hoppy says, whew, some story, Ben. And they drink more beer. Meanwhile, over on the Beyonder Island, Ed Strunk says, boy, you sure don't talk much, do you? I spill my guts, tell you my life story, and all I get out of you is your name is Beyonder, and you've been searching for your role in life, but no, nothing works out. Which sounds a lot like me, by the by. And that you just came here to be alone and think it over, all right? Beyonder says, yeah, more or less. Well, pal, I think you're onto something. Here with this approach, sitting and thinking. Been a real inspiration. See you later, okay? You said yourself, the guy just wants to think and be left alone. Like, why are you bugging him? But instead, he comes back 2 days later with like 100 people. Says, hey, Beyonder, old buddy, I was telling a few friends of mine over at the Big Island about your think system. And while a bunch of them are real interested, they wanted to come here and emulate you. I hope you don't mind.
I just realized one of the themes of this comic, and they've now driven into the ground, which is why I realized it, because they've done it twice. Cults seem to form around the Beyonder as a god-type figure, so maybe this is a commentary on religion or something. I'm trying to give it more credit than it deserves, maybe.
Possibly. But again,
cults keep forming around him.
If the point is for him to be alone, sit alone, solitary thinking, isn't this defeating the purpose by bringing hordes of people here to sit on the island and think? And if you look at that page, by the way, the third from the beginning of the line, the bald guy with the glasses and the Spider-Man shirt, that's Al Milgram. I just noticed that. He drew himself into the comic. So at that moment in New York City, we see this guy. He's basically a pawn. Well, I don't want to say a pawn. He's basically a servant of Mephisto, Mr. Bitterhorn. And he's going around recruiting a bunch of different supervillains, Juggernaut, Electro, Baron Mordo, Absorbing Man, Titania, all these different villains. He's recruiting them to be at a certain place at a certain time. And if they're there, they will they'll get further instructions. Upon completion, they'll be granted more power than they've ever had. Meanwhile, we see in Mephisto's realm, Mephisto's doing his best Jeff Goldblum, Malcolm pose there. And
I have that pop figure.
Watching the news, as he sees somebody talking about a South Seas Island guru who has inspired scores of seekers of enlightenment to search for their proper role in life, presumably blissfully just sitting and thinking about it. Doesn't that beat all? So,
Mephisto. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, they're all worshiping a god, like, just duplicating whatever a god type figure is doing, whether he's creating an HQ or he's just thinking on a beach.
And so Mephisto's like, this is a bit worrisome, but probably inconsequential. I think he senses there's something going on there. He talks to Death about his plan, about how they've gotten all these agents to agree to their terms, and each lackey, once they shake the hand of Bitterhorn, they're imprinted with an invisible sign, which mystically links them to the Beyonder's Bane machine. And all Mephisto needs is for a single one of those lackeys to get through when they attack the Beyonder and touch him, and it will release the energy within Beyonder's Bane in a surge that will cause feedback and destroy the Beyonder in a cataclysmic fireball of naked energy. Earth itself will be destroyed, along with approximately a third of the universe, and not to mention all the supervillains, but of course they don't know that. And the Beyonder says, or Mephisto says, I can sense you're wondering, is this power contained enough? He says, probably not, but thanks to consensus among all the great beings of the multiverse, I have another source to draw on, and we see a lot of the beings that we saw last issue. The Living Tribunal, the Inbetweener, Galactus, Elders of the Universe, some Celestials. He says, in fact, at the critical moment, for one brief instant, all the power in the universe shall be mine, shall be added to what I already have. For the creator of my infernal machine, my gunner, if you will, is the personification of the universe itself, eternity. So Mephisto has eternity on his side. That's how much all these cosmic, galactic, immortal beings are fearful of the Beyonder. So once this is all explained to Death, one of the Mephisto servants shows up and says, Master, I bear tidings. Your legion accursed is complete, all 99. And they all head to the island. Meanwhile, there's a news chopper there saying, this must be the place. Look at all those thinkers. Get some aerial footage. And we see a camera from CBS News saying, we'd like a few words with the guru. And Ed Strunk says, no, he doesn't like to talk. He just wants to be left alone. And meanwhile, as it shows up on the TV in Denver, we see Owen Reese, the Molecule Man, realize that it's the Beyonder, as the news is reporting that this the guru is the same person who called himself the Beyonder and made headlines as a self-proclaimed champion of life. And the Molecule Man's very upset. He runs off into a room to be alone and realizes that all the other cosmic powers of the universe are lining up against the Beyonder, and he wonders if he should go warn him. He thinks this is not going to come to a good end, just doesn't know what to do. And his girlfriend Marcia says, just come and rejoin the game, leave it alone, it'll be fine. We see some other heroes such as the X-Men watching the news as well, and Rachel Summers Phoenix wants to go and attack him, but Magneto says he's literally doing nothing, Rachel. We're going to leave him alone. Spider-Man is thinking, maybe I should try the Think system. Nothing else I do ever works. Oh, poor Spidey. And the Thing, finally, outside his trailer, 115 miles south of Thinker's Island, sees the news report, and his fury, his anger at the Beyonder is rekindled. So meanwhile, in the Mephisto realm, we see him sending out his 99 servants. And then we see the Mephisto watching Ed Strunk speak to the Beyonder on the island. And the Beyonder talks about how crowded it is now that Ed Strunk brought all these people to the island. And he's thinking about just moving on and leaving. And Mephisto's like, no! My agents are going to be there anytime. I can't have him lead. I need to create a diversion to delay him. And he shows up in the Thing's bedroom, appears as Thing's father, then it is as his football coach, then as Sue Storm, then as Alicia, all convincing him to go and fight the Beyonder to prove he's still a man. And he actually gets the Thing to sign a contract, which basically says, and the Thing doesn't bother to read it, but the contract basically says Mephisto's going to grant the Thing power that will multiply his strength and abilities by 10 times in exchange for the Thing's mortal soul, basically. So the thing runs out of bed, runs out of the trailer, swims to the island in no time, and attacks the Beyonder. And all the Beyonder wants to do is just sit there and think. So as the Beyonder is now distracted, Mephisto says, "Legion, accursed, attack!" And they all start heading toward the Beyonder, Dr. Doom, who you would really think Dr. Doom would, I mean, regardless of whatever deal he was offered, would not agree, because he knows the Beyonder maybe better than anybody. But he's there, right. The Wizard, Hobgoblin, Juggernaut, Abomination, Kraven the Hunter, Dr. Octopus, Absorbing Man, Vulture. I think that's all I can identify from the picture there. They're all attacking, and the Beyonder's not moving. He's like, eh, whatever. Well, they're all yelling, "Death to the Beyonder, rip him apart." And the thing thinks, where do they all come from? They all want to off the Beyonder, just like me. Do I beat him? Or do I help him? Or, and he's trying to decide. And the Beyonder thinks, should I let him destroy me? Should I not? I suppose I could just teleport away. And Mephisto's thinking, stay, you must fight. Or go gentle into death, but do not flee. And everyone stands ready. Eternity stands ready. The might of the multiverse is trembling. Molecule Man is kind of following what's going along, and he's very distracted in the game he's playing. But finally, Thing makes a choice to save the Beyonder. Says, Beyonder, you can't just sit there, you idiot. But he does. And the Beyonder says, Thing says, for crying out loud, it's clobbering time. And he, with the...
I guess. I love that.
Right? And with the added power that Mephisto gave him, he's 10 times as strong as he's been. He pretty much beats the crap out of this entire army that Mephisto has sent. And Mephisto's like, no, I'm ruined by my own plans. The thing is single-handedly ruining it. Only a few of my legion remain. He's quickly dispatching those. It's because I multiplied his strength. I could tear up his contract, depriving him of his increased strength. Of course, then I lose his soul, but I must. It's worth it. What's one soul compared to the obliteration of the one from beyond? So he rips up the contract. He says, now surely the thing must be swept aside. And the only sole surviving member of the army that Mephisto created is Juggernaut. And the thing's like, come and get it, Juggy, thinking he's got that extra power, right? Well, he doesn't. And the Juggernaut lays him out. And Thing is not in too good a shape. And as the Juggernaut reaches out, he's about to touch the Beyonder. Mephisto's thinking now. Thing says, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And he grabs the ankle of the Juggernaut and trips him. And he falls, kerwham, just short of the Beyonder. Mephisto's yelling, hurry, Cretan, the meltdown is beginning. But before the Juggernaut can even get up, everybody disappears because the Beyonder's Bane machine has overloaded. The machine just wasn't able to any longer contain the power of the Beyonder. And all that power will eventually seep back into the body of whence it came. And Mephisto's heartbroken. It's ended. The Beyonder's Bane is but a slab. It's the moment of failure. And he turns to Death saying, our chance, beloved, has passed. Beloved, and Death teleports away. And Mephisto's beside himself. How has it come to this? The Lord of Pain must suffer the bitter agony of failure and futility. My darling Death, don't desert me now. Come back, come back. And even in that moment in the fiery pits of Mephisto's realm, people actually get some comfort. They're like, oh, we're in this warm lava, and it's actually comforting, because that's how far Mephisto, how far his focus has fallen. It's no longer even painful for them. We see Eternity leave the slag of the Builder's Bane, striding away majestically to his place in the multiverse. We see the rest of the cosmic beings return uneasily to their own affairs. And in Denver, Molecule Man is relieved as well that everything seems to be okay. The crisis has passed. Meanwhile, the Thing on the island says, now that riffraff's cleared out, it's time for our rematch, Beyonder. But first, let me grab a little nap. And whoomp, he passes out. And the Beyonder thinks, you know what? I just thought of something. While I've been thinking about my role in the multiverse, I apparently caused a whole bunch of people to find theirs, especially Ben. By just sitting here, I forced him to realize his true essence was a defender of life, a hero, not a murderer. Maybe that's my true role. My true role is to teach all the other beings in existence what their true roles are. I think I'm onto something here. And he's got a smile on his face once more. And we see that the tie-ins for issue 7 continue in New Mutants 36, Amazing Spider-Man 273, X-Men 202, Defenders 152, and the Spectacular Spider-Man 111. But the next issue of Secret Wars, number 8, is entitled Betrayal. So, I wonder what that will entail.
See, I really like the setup at the end of this, but the setup could have come like 5 issues earlier. Like, if I think my main problem with this as a serial series is that too many issues are actually episodic, or Beyonder learns the same lesson he learned in the last issue. Because then hasn't that been his purpose since the last issue or two, where he's like, I'll teach people to be their best selves or whatever.
Yeah, I keep going back to just the inconsistency of it, right? Like, if we were just reading like this series and none of the tie-ins, you do lose out on a little bit, because there are some tie-ins that are good or that give you insight into Beyonder's character, or he learned some lessons. But the problem is they're so wildly inconsistent, mm-hmm. that then you come back to the main series and you're like, well, wait, why would he act this way when he acted this way and learned this other lesson over here? Like, it just, like, it's all jumbled up. I think what needs to happen is you need to take every single issue of Secret Wars 2 and every single tie-in and reorder them. And it doesn't matter what issue or what tie-ins are, you know, like what issue of Secret Wars 2 says, okay, this issue of this regular book ties in here. Just put it where it most belongs. Like, you take like that Power Man and Iron Fist book and you'd move it forward. You take the Power Pack and the Thor and you'd move it forward. Like, it would be way earlier in the Secret Wars 2 crossovers before the Beyonder has really learned that much. That's number one. Number two, even within the main Secret Wars 2 series itself, it's still inconsistent. Like you yourself said, he keeps like learning the same lesson over and over and it's not sticking.
Like I said, this is a very foreboding thing from the stay at the end, without even a tease of the next issue's title. Like, this would be like the third act of a movie. It's like, oh, now I've got it. And that's like, uh-oh.
But do you
really push the Avengers, one must become their greatest villain, is what I hope the direction this comic goes.
And the other thing is like, okay, so I understand they wanted to do like a villains issue, but we got like zero characterization from any of the villains. It would have been much
more interesting. We couldn't even tell who the villains were in half the scenes.
Yeah, it would have been much more interesting to do, like you were talking about the cover, right? Like, the cover, there's all these villains. We see Kang, we see Blastar, we see MODOK, Juggernaut, Kraven, Dr. Doom, Ultron, Dr. Octopus,
Doc Ock,
Crimson Dynamo, Diablo, Baron Mordo, Abomination, Executioner, Enchantress, Vulture, Electro, Grim Reaper.
Good rogues gallery, right?
Yeah, there. Completely. And it would have been great to see them come and try to recruit. Hey, come and be a bad guy. It's so much fun to be a bad guy, Beyonder. That would have been interesting. Instead, we got Mephisto, who I've talked before last when he showed up last issue, issue 6, about how much of a mustache twirling, two-dimensional character he is. He's almost like a when something goes wrong in the Marvel Universe and they want to change things, like, we no longer want Peter Parker and Mary Jane to be married. We'll get Mephisto to fix it. He's like a plot device. He's not even a character, you know? He just snaps his fingers and alters reality. It's not good writing. It's not good storytelling. And, you know, here he's like, okay, I'm just going to recruit all these villains and send them out. And it's like, really? Not only is it an unoriginal idea and just out and out stupid, like, why couldn't you put the sign on yourself, teleport yourself next to the Beyonder and touch him? And then boom, all the Beyonder's Bane power. Like, it makes no sense. Beyond that, it's completely mustache twirling and stupid. And then it doesn't even work and he's a complete failure and totally futile.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not great.
No, it's really not great. And this is part of the reason why people say that the series isn't very good. Like, it started out with some hope and some promise and it was kind of over the top and fun, but then it just starts really bogging down like around issue 6 and 7. So,
you know what 2018 comic it reminds me of? Hunt for Wolverine, which is way too drawn out, a good but not much less time. I feel the same about Secret Wars too. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Not that we've been reading both or anything.
Yeah. And the other thing that we already touched on was how the art without Joe Rubinstein on inks is a lot looser and just not quite as good. I really do. You know how Hollywood, and I know you know this, is all stuck in the whole remake, no original idea kind of thing. Just take an idea and doesn't matter how lame it was the first go around. Let's just redo it.
Oh yeah, they remade Overboard earlier this year. So yeah,
yeah. So I would not mind seeing that with Secret Wars 2. Take somebody like Donnie Cates, or I mean, our dream guy obviously would be Kevin Smith, but take the overriding idea of this being, right? And redo it. Just redo it. And don't do any tie-ins. Just do a 9-issue.
Or do it as a comic again.
Yeah.
And interesting, because Kevin Smith is a comic author, and he's not terrible. Yeah.
And just tell the story. And you can do it either way. You can write it as if it's in the 1980s. You know, I'm going to write this as if it's 1985 and just erase this original Secret Wars 2 and supplement this in its place in the
Chronicles. The Beyonder Chronicles.
Yeah, exactly. Beyonder Chronicles.
Or The Adventures of Beyonder.
Or do it
Adventures
now.
From Beyond.
Or do it now. Beyonder. Or completely redo it now. I'd be on board with either one of those things. Because I think that there are some good ideas here. But by the time we get to this issue 7, all the goodwill's been squandered. I don't even think it was doing very good sales at this point. I think everybody was pretty Secret Wars fatigued. Because, I mean, in no way does this compare to the first Secret Wars at all.
I am shocked the direction we've taken since the first Secret Wars. It's there's no similarity in the storytelling. No. Or even the Beyonder himself.
No, not at all.
Now he's like a clueless guy who looks like Michael Jackson. Before he was it's like a prequel movie to Star Wars or something. They've destroyed the illusion of what was once powerful and turned him into a silly looking man boy.
Yeah, and the first one's so good.
It's great.
I long for the days when we were covering Secret Wars 1-12. I long for those days. All right. Was there anything else that we want to say about this issue? Or that you I know I don't want to say anything else about this issue.
No. Is
there
anything else? You said it gets better.
It does. It does. This is the low point. Now, granted, it never, really climbs completely out of the gutter, but issue 8 and 9 are better than this. This is the Think System is the low point of the series.
And even if it's not a movie, I still think Marvel has at least a Netflix or a Disney streaming show to get out of this property. Directed by Kevin Smith, who wants to do TV. Who does a lot of TV.
It's got to be totally tongue-in-cheek, because nobody could take this stuff seriously.
Oh, no. It would. You almost want someone who just knows 80s nostalgia to do it. Like the guy who does Stranger Things. Anyway.
David Harbour as the Beyonder.
Oh my God, you've just sold me a subscription to Disney streaming service.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.